It was quite the reception you had the other day, Mr. Hanlon. All that adulation must have been quite intoxicating.
Yes.
But you know what rather surprised me? That you looked so ordinary. From the newspaper reports, I was expecting some godlike giant of a man.
Ah, well, they say I look bigger with my clothes off.
My rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run.
Hello and welcome to CageCast, the podcast that joyfully dissects the filmography of one of America's most unique and engaging leading men, Nicolas Cage. I'm Nate Porter, and with me is Britt Porter.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be back.
Yes.
For those of you who are new to the show, here's how CageCast works. We're in the process of watching every Nicolas Cage film in order according to their official release date. We'll be reviewing every film in which Nicolas Cage had either a starring role or an integral supporting role. This week, we're reviewing The Boy in Blue.
Oh, we sure are. Wow. Well, we break down the film's plot and themes, and then after that, we'll rate each film on a scale from 0 to 4 in three different categories. The film as entertainment, the film as art, and then in terms of Cage's performance. Last week, our cumulative score for Birdie was a 16, a whopping 16 out of 24, which is about a 66.6 out of 100, which brings it in as the best Nick Cage movie out of the three that we've reviewed so far. Now, the question is, will The Boy in Blue claim the top spot this week?
And as a reminder, we do not share our scores with each other before the show.
And if we did, we wouldn't tell you.
Right. Because we're tricky that way.
Right.
Tricky.
That's us. So, after that, we round out the show with our patented CageCast Running Totals Rapid Fire Questionnaire. It's actually not an original idea at all, so I'm not sure how they let me patent it.
Hey, Nate, guess what?
What's that, Britt?
We got some feedback this week. Woohoo!
You're a liar.
I'm not!
Okay.
I promise.
Prove it.
Lula from the Cage a Lot Castle Forum, which is a Nick Cage fan site online, sent us her take on Birdie. And here's what she had to say. Birdie was a film in which Nick Cage was not too comfortable. He referred to it once as emotional vomit, in the sense that he was just completely open and at all times still quite deep in the method. The result, from my point of view, was a very powerful, authentic, ironically mature performance from a very young actor.
Do you know what method acting is?
I don't, but I'm guessing some sort of very technical, sort of almost academic.
Well, it's basically style. like you're that character. You are that character. Like
you live and breathe.
Eat and breathe. And when you're not, you know, filming, they still call you that person, and you talk like that person, you act like that person, and
wow.
You know, right?
That's intense.
I bet he does it for Ghost Rider too.
I hope he does. That would be fantastic.
I wonder if he wears a skull mask. Never mind. probably not, but this is a great time to remind you that we desperately desire your feedback here on CageCast. If you've ever wanted your name and email read on a podcast before, this is probably your best shot. We want to thank Lula for her insight, and we're honored to have you as a listener, Lula, and make sure you share the CageCast love there on Cage a Lot Castle. It is a hoot to go to that site. You've been there, Britt.
I have.
Yeah, it's
fabulous.
Something. And we are, CageCast are members now of the Cage a Lot Castle. So Google that, people. You'll have a fun time.
Yes, absolutely. And just once again, another reminder, we are now on iTunes.
Yes.
And so far we have two reviews, although I don't know that one of them counts because it's from Nate.
I put my username as I am Nate Porter, so it's not confusing for people.
Okay. They know we're rating our own show.
Right.
I hope you gave it a good review.
Have you rated it yet?
I haven't. I have not.
Let's.
I feel like that's, you know.
We can get up to three.
Okay. Our other review is from Kevin Crossman, who is a podcasting great in his own right. So thank you, Kevin, for listening.
Yes, thanks, Kevin.
So here's what you need to do. We need you to go to iTunes and give us the best rating you can without completely lying.
What about like a partial lie?
A little white one, maybe, but we cannot officially condone lying in any of its forms here on CageCast. But our big upcoming listener push sort of coming out party is going to be Horizon, Arizona. That's just a couple more podcasts down the line. And we're hoping to have some guest analysis on that episode as well. Perhaps some familiar names from out there in the podcastosphere. So yes, really, your high praise on iTunes will help us get off the ground, as it were.
Perfect. Yeah. All right.
So we're there's our plug.
Yes, plugged. Consider it plugged.
Yes.
So let's get to the boy in blue.
Okay, wow. Let's get
going. You have your wine?
I do.
Okay, I'm
going to
take a sip because I'm going to need it.
Give us our stats, Nate.
Okay, well, the release date was January 17th, 1986. So over a year after Birdie came out, this came out. The budget, I don't know, and I guess I kind of don't care, because I know the box office was $275,000.
Oh, no.
Total. Yeah.
The box office did not care for The Boy in Blue.
Did not.
No. Yikes. Notable co-stars in this, Cynthia Dale, who plays Maggie, and she was also in Moonstruck, which we'll be reviewing in not too long.
Seen her work there.
Yep, and a bunch of TV. Nothing really notable. But then Christopher Plummer, who we all know and like.
Legend.
Yes.
Living legend.
Yes. Yes. And we'll just name a couple of his big ones. Obviously, The Sound of Music.
Classic. Love it.
Wonderful. Have you seen The Sound of Music?
I was doing that on purpose. No. Are you kidding me? No, I haven't seen it.
Can you believe it, folks?
I need to see it.
This man claims to be a cinemaphile, but has not seen The Sound of Music.
Why don't we just have a Sound of Music, Lawrence of Arabia, and Gone with the Wind day
marathon,
you and me. So we just...
We'll get them all out of the way.
Oh my gosh. It's only because it's so long.
It's wonderful. And he is wonderful.
I'm down for
in
a
it.
Nazi movie. There's Nazis in it, right?
There are Nazis.
So I'm down for that,
okay.
But it's just the length.
He was also in The Insider. He was the villain in Pixar's Up. And he's also in David Fincher's new movie, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Ooh.
So still active. Active and working.
I wonder if he has
wonderful.
A nose ring in that.
I don't know.
So the director was Charles Jarrett. He did a bunch of TV stuff, a few movies that I or you probably have never heard of, and that's about it. So
that might give you a little bit of a taste for what's in store with this podcast.
Right. As far as the writers, the screenplay was by Douglas Bowie, who's also done nothing else that you ever heard of, a lot of TV stuff. One thing I did find in my research, his first writing credit, Brit, 1973's, and I kid you not, The Girl in Blue.
Whoa! So this film was really
sensing a
big departure for
that's
him.
Exactly, I'm sensing a theme creatively voice.
Yeah,
this is obviously
he is exploring some uncharted territory here.
A sequel in spirit. Now here's the sad part, Britt. This thing was nominated for 3 Genie Awards.
Oh,
you know what that is?
I don't even want to know.
Okay, so the Genie Awards are Canada's Oscars.
Ouch.
So it was nominated. Oh, and I'm sound depressed because if you've seen this movie or watch it along with us, you'll know why. It was nominated in art direction, sound editing, and Sean Sullivan was nominated for supporting actor. He played Walter, that old coot who made the seats.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Well,
so,
he wasn't. He was maybe the small shining moment.
No,
in
he wasn't. So the cage genre here, definitely Bad Boy Rebel Cage.
Yeah, sort of.
With a soft spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I put lovably dopey Cage.
I am going to contest the lovably part. I'm going to go with just dopey for this one. Personally.
I think a lot of people would find him lovably dopey.
Well, I don't count me among them.
Okay, well, we agree on
dopey Cage.
We agree on dopey.
Dopey for sure.
As far as the soundtrack goes, normally, as you know, we play a few songs off the movie soundtrack. We're not going to do that this week for a few reasons. One, it's hard to find. It's really just instrumental tracks as well, really just a score as well. And it's really horrible.
Yes, it is.
It's one of the worst movie scores I've ever heard. So I think we're going to wait till the end and play one of the tracks for you. But in lieu of some tracks from the actual soundtrack, I just picked some nice boat-themed and rowing-themed music to interject, so I hope you like it. The one other thing I want to note about this movie is it's incredibly hard to find. It's not on Netflix or Quickster, which Netflix is becoming in a few weeks from now as of the recording of this podcast. And I looked it up tonight. It is $31.13 to buy this DVD from Amazon.
Wow.
Right. So it is $1.95 to buy the VHS tape.
Guess which one we bought.
Right. So we bought the VHS tape and had to go down to Goodwill to buy the...
to buy a VCR.
A VCR, because we did not have one. You probably don't have one either. So... you know, I'll just say that this movie's out there for those who want to find it, and that's all I'm going to say.
Yep. Well, coming up next, we'll break down The Boy in Blue, but first, one of the most artistic things we'll talk about today, this is Patty Griffin singing the rowing song.
As I row, 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 going so slow, 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 just down below me. Here's the old sea, just down below me. Here's the old sea. Nobody knows, knows, knows so many things, things so, so out of range. Sometimes so strange, sometimes so sweet, sometimes so lonely. The further I go, more letters from home never arrive. And I'm alone all of the way, all of the way, alone and
welcome back. For those of you just joining us, we are reviewing Nicolas Cage's The Boy in Blue.
And I've always got to point out, if you're, why are you just joining us now? Listen to the first part of the show, for Pete's sake. Britt, what's your history with The Boy in Blue?
Again, nothing. Nothing at all. Never heard of it prior to our adventure here, and so going in blind.
Yep, let's get into this. Let's do a quick plot synopsis, and then we'll break it down. Go ahead.
Okay. The movie opens as Ned Hanlon, played by Nicolas Cage, is sculling, which apparently is a Canadian word for racing boats in a slow or boring manner. He wins the race despite sabotage. We soon learn that Ned is a bootlegger and gains his sculling skills by having to constantly keep ahead of the law. He's soon persuaded by a businessman named Billy to go to Philadelphia and compete in the Centennial Regatta, which he wins with the help of the most amazing invention ever conceived by man or beast. A sliding seat.
Wearing an ever-present blue shirt, he continues his winning ways and eventually catches the eye of Colonel Knox, a rich, corrupt old man who wants to manage Ned himself. Ned quickly falls for Maggie, the Colonel's headstrong niece, who enjoys the attention but plays hard to get. He kisses her at a party, but she slaps him and sends him out of the house. He loses his next race, because he's still drunk from a depression-fueled bender at the perceived loss of Maggie.
Ned returns to his bootleggery and is immediately thrown in prison. The colonel arranges his release. Maggie warms up to him a bit when he returns and begins training for the North American Championship. Ned buys Maggie a puppy that she names Rowboat, but that doesn't stop her from informing him of her engagement to a stuffed shirt from Harvard. His sweaty pecs glisten as he tells her, he doesn't need anyone.
Ooh. In Ned's next race, he's continuously agonized by the Australian Edward Trickett. So much so that Ned rams his boat and is subsequently disqualified from any North American rowing competition. He returns to Canada alone, but is greeted to a hero's welcome, which goes to show Canadians have little to be excited about. In an effort to reignite his career, he employs the help of Walter, the old codger who created the miraculous sliding seat that gave him such an edge in early races.
Walter compels the colonel, who now represents Trickett, to set up a race in London to decide once and for all the world championship. Maggie, in the meantime, discovers that her uncle is up to no good and flees to warn Ned. And like a moth drawn to a flame with chiseled 20-year-old abs, they end up making sweet, sweet love.
Aww.
After which, Maggie informs Ned that she enjoys being compromised by him.
She really does. The race is agreed to. Ned and Maggie get married. They go to London. And despite Billy's sabotage, Trickett's creepy mustache, and some painfully long rowing scenes, Ned wins the race and goes on to a life of fame and fortune, at least in Canada.
And scene.
That's The Boy in Blue. Are we done?
Well, I think we should talk to the viewers a little bit about...
They're not viewers.
Oh, we should talk to the listeners a little bit about The Boy in Blue.
Okay.
Although,
where to begin?
Start at the very beginning. little Sound of Music throw out for you?
From that? Uh-huh, okay. Well, can we just talk about Sound of Music instead of this movie?
That'd be good, but no, right. Boy in Blue it is. So, well, the first time we see Nicolas Cage, Ned, is actually in the opening credits. He's in a sculling race, and we're given to believe this is what? The late 1800s, I believe.
I think so, like 1870s or
something. 1870s in Canada. So, Canadian rowboat race. And just stop and picture that, if you would, for a moment.
And it's not like sleek gliding boats. It's like rowboats.
No, it is rowboats.
It's like your grandpa went fishing out in one of these things.
The folks on the docks cheering them on seem to be excited, but I can tell you that, you know, not the best opening of a film I've ever seen.
Well, we're told that this is before baseball or football or soccer. And this used to be exciting.
Used to be. Right. And I just want to point out, we have nothing against competitive rowing as a sport.
No.
It's wonderful. It is exciting now. I've seen it in the Olympics. Now that is a good show.
If you want to be bored, you have every right to be.
I'm just saying that you cannot really compare what we're going to talk about today with competitive modern rowing.
Sure. Okay. So let's keep
that aside.
Okay. We've already spent too much time on this.
I think so. So Ned, Nicolas Cage, rowing in his boat, and he's good looking. I mean, again, we've seen now in four films, I think any opportunity that he has to show off his body, he is taking. And as an active viewer, I can't say that I'm displeased with that. But yeah, he looks good. Nice chiseled, rock hard body. Nice.
I know the feeling. every time I look in the mirror, this mystery man rams his boat. And Ned yells at him and loses his oar and ends up winning the race.
Yeah.
And it's all this big.
And it's like the opening credit. I mean.
It's supposed to be exciting. It's so stinking boring to me.
Yeah, but we do find out this guy who rammed him turns out to be Billy.
Yeah, because he shows up at his
boathouse.
His boathouse, which is really a bootleggery.
Right.
I coined that term.
Oh,
what
okay.
else would it be known as?
A bootlegging operation, perhaps.
Yeah, where does that take place?
At a bootleggery.
Yeah, that's exactly
you got
right.
It.
So
okay.
Billy shows up. He takes, you know, a liking to the whore on Cage's arm.
Well, and so this is after the race. It's late at night. The bootleggery is filled with people who are drinking, and this nice young loose woman who is, you know.
Oh, she's got a heart of gold, but she is. Out there.
She's out there. So we find out this guy's name is Billy. He's an American from Philadelphia, and he wants to manage Ned as a professional rower.
Because he's got natural talent.
Right. Natural talent, and he's the best he's ever seen, and wouldn't it be so great they can make piles of money. And at this point, we're sort of figuring out that Ned is a bootlegger by trade, and he's getting out to go do a job, and not really taking Billy seriously. So Ned goes out. He does his bootlegging job.
Right. He says no to Billy.
Yeah.
Billy stays back and
hangs with the hookers.
So Ned goes out on his job. The cops, and in a very weird turn, like a priest who's telling the cops what to do, like an angry mob shows up exactly where he lands to deliver this whiskey or whatever.
Right.
Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. And it is. Like, it's like a...
They're there to get Frankenstein's monster or something.
They are, but they're led by pitchforks and torches. They're led by a priest.
A bony faced.
Repent, ye sinner!
It's pretty bad.
And then there's hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensue. They try to get him. He's too fast.
Away.
He knocks over the cop's boat.
And it's, you know, you think you're going to be hearing da 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 in the background. You know.
Right. So what happens?
So he goes back to his bootleggery to bang a hooker. Nothing. I mean, as you can see, we're already off to such a riveting start. What more can we say?
So at this point, I want to say that if you listen to the first part of our show, we said a lot of people have a background in television, and that rings true now. We didn't know that when we watched the movie at first, but this isn't any better production value-wise than a TV movie from 1986. It's just not. It doesn't look particularly good. It doesn't sound particularly good. A lot of the lines you can tell have been dubbed in later at a later time because they didn't get good sound the first time. It's pretty shoddy, even for Canada, which is known for just shoddy everything.
And Cage,
except for syrup
and Mounties.
Wait, syrup is from Maine.
No, they have maple trees up there.
Okay, well then syrup, I guess, and Mounties. Go ahead.
But Cage is supposed to be playing a Canadian. This whole thing is taking place in Canada.
You know,
he doesn't
absolutely.
Have a Canadian. He doesn't have a Canadian accent.
Here. Not the slightest hint of an accent.
Not even trying.
He sounds
not even
like
trying.
Nick Cage. He sounds like a dopey. He sounds more Canadian than Valley Girl.
Yeah, he does. Not
he doesn't
not even
sound
trying.
Canadian then.
No,
either.
No. So we're moving the plot along. Ned goes back from his foiled bootlegging delivery, chased down by the Frankenstein mob, led by a, I don't know, prohibition reverend.
Preacher.
Preacher. Led by a prohibition preacher.
So.
And he goes back, and what does he do? Anything a good old-fashioned bootlegger would do, he screws a whore.
Screw a whore.
Screws
and
a whore
once again,
in bootlegger.
You know what? Nicolas Cage, he deserves it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right.
He's worked hard rowing all day.
He's a rowing fool. And it's Nicolas Cage. I mean, he's a lady killer. We well established that.
Yes.
Throughout our podcast yeah. so far, and I'm sure long into the future.
So, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Nate, but listeners, come on, you know who you are. What always happens when you're screwing whores? The cops
the
show
cops
up.
The cops show up.
Isn't it always the case?
The deputy asks the lieutenant, should we let him finish? And the preacher who's obviously everyone's boss says, not only is he a bootlegger, he's fornicating out of wedlock. Go up there.
Yeah.
Coitus interruptus. He doesn't say that, but it's
you
exact,
might as well.
Might as well. And so, they bust in.
They break up the
they
good,
break up
good,
the good time.
Time.
She, you know, she got hers in, but he's just left there hurting.
Well, but not for long, because he got to get away from the cops.
Well, he jumps in the water. Jumps out the window. And who's waiting
for
him?
Billy. Wow, coincidental.
One more side note. Mustaches in this movie. Everywhere.
Everywhere mustaches.
Everywhere.
Good, thick, bristled mustaches.
That's right.
It could be a drinking game about mustaches.
Oh, I hope not. People would be dying in droves if anyone ever watched this movie.
Listeners,
which they do not.
If you can come up with a good mustache-related drinking game for this movie, please let us know.
All right.
So waiting for Ned. Yes. What a coincidence.
Yes. I remember even asking, how in the world would he be there? That doesn't make any sense at all. So they row away, and they get to a ferry boat that just happens to be passing
it's
by.
It's a steamboat.
Right,
a steamboat.
Exactly. And Ned quickly finds out what Billy's really up to.
You bilge rat, you set the law on me! Back in the water, bilge rat! I'm fine!
It's a hell of a way to treat your new partner.
Oh, come on, you're just lucky this boat went by.
Lucky? It was planned to the minute. All that hanky-panky of yours is what damn near buggered the works. Can't imagine what she sees in you anyway.
Oh, really? Same thing you saw. Natural ability.
So, right, so you just heard Billy's rigged the whole setup, called the cops, interrupted his good time so that he could get Ned to the States.
His hanky-panky.
So that he can get Ned to the States to compete in this Centennial Regatta. Because
right, exactly.
He's
no,
just got,
get him to Philly.
Get into Philly. Home of the cream cheese.
And good bells.
Night. And sandwiches.
And eagles.
stop us somebody.
All right, so they get to this regatta, and it's a centennial, so it's got to be 1876.
It is,
right?
Indeed.
And so Ned is like a kid in some kind of store.
Oh my gosh.
He's like running around and
so,
jumping
well,
on the carousel. It's like boop 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 boop.
So first of all,
he's just like a giddy.
I want to point out he leaves Canada. He leaves the land of the north literally shirtless. We go from this shirtless bootlegger Ned to this dandy, basically.
Hold on, I need more wine. Hold on, keep talking.
Who is, yeah, just like Nate said, like there's some kind of circus parade or carnival going on, I think must be to celebrate the boat race, and he is practically bounding from sight to sight.
Well, he's never seen anything like this, and it's just, you don't know what to make of this guy, because at one point he's a man banging a hooker. You know, that's so rude. Making love to a hooker. and then he's like this little 8-year-old running around these, you know, kaleidoscopic carnival games. And so it's really kind of a funny juxtaposition there. They get there. Billy thought he was going to have a boat for Ned. He doesn't. They run into
a street urchin. Coincidentally,
you know, might as
again.
Well have been, please, sir, I want some more. Kind of
kid. But instead it's, I know where you can find a boat.
I know where you can get you a boat. You're just going to have to give me one of them there cigarettes.
it'll cost you a dollar.
And a dollar, mister.
Yeah, apparently this 10-year-old's lived a lot of life.
They bring him to this shed, this well-lit barn, where there's this picturesque, I don't know, sculling boat. What are they called, the boats?
Shells.
A shell, sculling shell. And this thing, it's there's almost an angelic light being shown on it. And the big deal with this is that the seat slides.
Whoa.
And we're showing a scene before this where all the Harvard boys are getting their butts wiped down with grease.
Grease. Now, we know historically...
Well, we know Harvard boys anyway. That still happens, but...
We know that until the invention of... this sliding seat, this is how it was done, but man alive.
The seat's closed. Slides, boys. Slides like butter. I invented her. She'll give you 40 yards on a mile, easy. And all them Harvard boys with grease on their backsides won't give it a chance. Laugh at me. Just like him. Look at him. Thinks I'm queer in the attic.
We also meet Walter for the first time, who we will meet several times.
He's like the Canadian version of the old prospector that says, "Dagnabbit!" all the time.
Yes, but he's going to make a fortune on his sliding seat.
I'm going to make a fortune, but those Hobbit boys think I'm queer in the attic.
Does he actually say that?
Yeah, but it's on the clip, so we probably will cut this out. Go ahead. So we meet Walter, but we'll hear him on the clip.
We meet Walter... You've just heard him talk about his seat and other things besides. And what happens? We get the boat in the water, and Ned falls in the water.
Boop, 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 boop.
Right. More hijinks. All the Harvard boys looking on. His pretty fancy pants suit all soaking wet. How is he going to row this thing? Apparently, they must have gone down for the regatta a few days before, because we have some scenes of him rowing in the early morning dusk.
In the frisculating dusk light.
Learning to use this magical seat.
This is also where we're introduced to the Colonel, Colonel Knox.
Oh yeah, he's one of the betters at the regatta. He's betting on the other guy. Yeah, I can't remember his name. Guy. No, but doesn't matter. The anyway. Guy.
So Colonel Knox is played by Christopher Plummer, who actually is an actor and does a fine job in this movie.
Yeah. I think with what he's been given.
He's the best actor in this movie.
Yeah. We'll get to our ratings, but suffice to say, this is not a bright, shining moment on Cage's resume.
So, obviously you can tell that the Colonel is evil because he's white, he has a mustache, he's rich.
He smokes a lot, like a
cigars,
chimney.
Yes,
like
cigars. Did I mention he's rich? He owns land.
And he's rich.
So he's a bad guy. He's a gambler. He's a degenerate. And we establish early on that he's up to no good.
Ned gets on the water. He's wearing his baby blue racing shirt.
I think it's the cheapest one that Billy could find.
Probably. He wins the race in his sliding seat, shows all those Harvard boys. They don't know nothing about no sliding seat.
I want to say about these racing scenes, okay? Now, I love in these racing scenes when they cut back to the crowd on the shore. Now, it's on the shore, so it's not like you've got this person on an earpiece now, like it's NASCAR. No, they're yelling, and they're saying things like, I wrote these down, yeah, that's good, and show them your stuff, and row! I mean, I guess what would you say, but really.
I know.
It's really, and who are you saying it to or for?
And then they cut from these frenzied crowd moments to life on the water is relatively calm. I mean, it doesn't really look like...
It's not relatively calm. It's downright boring.
It doesn't really look like they're fighting that hard.
Right.
I mean, especially Ned. He just sort of looks like he's out for a morning row.
Yeah, it's not like he's going really fast, like these Olympic trials that we see now where they're just like,
balls to the wall. This is the Centennial Regatta.
You know, leisurely, at his own pace, once in a while, he might think about rowing
and yet somehow he wins.
We don't know because they don't show us that race. They cut away because they think he's going to do so poorly.
Oh, right, but he does end up winning.
You find out at the end.
You find out at the end. And the colonel is pissed because nobody knows who this Ned Hanlon is, so nobody gambles on him.
So we're right in a sense. He hasn't won the race yet. He won the semi-finalist
heat. Oh, the qualifying
heat. And so we see them in a bar after this, and everyone's there, and Christopher Plummer's there with his evil-looking, couldn't-look-more-evil henchmen with the mustaches, and they're trying to knock him out. Not subtly, just like, we're going to send him over a beer that's drugged.
And Ned doesn't drink the beer because old codger Walter says, you got to race in the morning, boy.
So who does drink the beer is this horrible Canadian journalist whose only claim to fame, apparently, is that he dubbed Ned the Boy in Blue.
Wow. Tell me, how does it feel to be carrying your country's banner against a major...
They're not reading about me back home, are they?
Absolutely. You're front page news. I've even given you a nickname.
Yeah? The Blue Flash?
The Boy in Blue.
That makes me sound like some kind of a fancy boy.
So after Colonel Knox's henchmen are foiled in the bar because the journalist drinks the beer, they go after Ned and Billy in the alley, which...
Another hooker?
Yeah, they're only foiled by Billy appearing to be in the throes of passionate love with another hooker and Ned hiding under her skirts.
Billy's pants were down, and Ned was underneath her buttress.
Right. We don't want to know.
So they get out, and they think they're home free, and then they get caught again, and they actually catch up to them and break...
Billy's arm. Because Billy tells them he's Ned.
Right. So at this point, you're thinking, this Billy guy is okay, and I think Billy even enjoys the friendship with Ned at this point.
I don't think
he's a bad guy.
No.
I think he's just kind of easily swayed, as we'll come to find out.
So, let's see what happens. Ned ends up going to the regatta because he doesn't have a broken arm.
Right, he wins.
He wins. Whoop-dee-doo.
These racing scenes could not take place at a slower pace. It is just the opposite of exciting to watch this. I don't know how you felt about it, but...
I agree.
Well, it's just like pulling teeth watching these scenes.
So, he wins the race. He goes back to Canada, even though he's still a wanted bootlegger there, and is... cheered by the crowd in his dandy suit. He's the Boy in Blue, their hometown hero. He's greeted by his one-time flame, the hooker. What's her name? Dulcie?
Dulcie.
All right. Then he is approached by Colonel Knox. And at this point, Colonel Knox is clearly, you know, wants to manage him, but not necessarily for Ned's own advantage or gain.
Right. Basically, with these guys, there's this whole group of wagering old men who... flagrantly manage one person and then bet either for him or against him, depending on what mood strikes him.
Right, what's going to make them the most money.
Right.
And Ned's looking like a promising investment. So
absolutely.
They go out to his stables, see him, and meet Maggie.
Yes, who Ned sees as a promising investment.
Yes, and so we meet her for the first time and sort of see that she is...
She's uppity, I'll tell you that right now, Britt.
Yes, she's the colonel's niece.
She's not a woman of the 1870s. She doesn't know her place. She speaks her mind. She talks down to the menfolk.
But she is a woman of honor.
She is.
She will not be engaged...
She's chaste.
Yes, inappropriately. So, anyway, it comes out that Colonel Knox wants to manage Ned, but Billy's still in the picture. Who cares? I have to say, there's just no emotional investment in these characters. I mean,
not yet.
There's no real... You can't... I don't care. I don't care what happens to Billy or to Ned at this point. Ned obviously has eyes for Maggie, who... you know, goes rowing with him, but brings a chaperone.
Okay,
and...
no, let me just...
I mean,
let's
come
break.
On.
Let's break this down a little bit. Why don't we care?
I don't... Well, for one, Ned is ridiculous. He's a ridiculous character. He doesn't... He's goofy. He's stereotypical. He's very badly written, for one. I mean, come on. He's just... Some of the lines that he has to say... I mean, there's one point where he's talking to Billy about banging the whore, and I believe he...
Making
love to the whore. And I believe he actually says something like, she likes me for my natural abilities, same as you. And you're just like...
Ultimately, we don't care what's happening here, because this movie is just misfiring on every level. Bad writing, bad acting, even from Nicolas Cage. Usually if a movie is bad, but the star is good, I'm willing to give it a pretty big pass and see where the story is going. At this point, I'm kind of in shock watching this movie because we haven't seen our boy Nick Cage put in a bad performance until now. And I leaned over and asked Britt, what happened? We just saw him in Birdie.
I know.
And he was as good as any actor I've ever seen, frankly. And here, it's laughable.
It is. And, you know, the story, there's no risk. There's no sense of danger or urgency. The story is boring. No, why do we care about Ned Hanlon? What is intriguing about this character story that it has to be told in film? I mean, at one point, you're told that if he gets caught by the police, he goes to jail for a year. Big whoop. Who cares? His rowing career is down the toilet. He still has his bootlegging work to fall back on, which you can tell, at least initially in the movie, he seems to prefer. So, right. You know, he loses his rowing career. So what? Big deal. He can go back to bootlegging and screwing whores. Sounds like a pretty good life. I mean,
Making
love to whores. So, but, you know, there's nothing to lose. There's nothing on the line.
The film's spotting stakes. That's what they always talk about on that show. And there's nothing really that we're invested in. We don't care about rowing. They don't make us care about rowing.
No.
The acting is bad. The writing is bad. The direction is...
Is there direction?
Perfunctory. I don't even know what that means, but I'm sure it's accurate. And so that's why I hope, as a listener, you understand that a lot of times we take a little bit more care in these reviews, but there's really nothing here in this movie. He's at this party, and all the Harvard guys are there, and they say something like he doesn't bathe, and so he punches one of them. And,
of course.
Right, and he gets in a fight with Maggie and kisses her, and she loves it.
She does love it, but
she can't say she loves
it.
She's
scared. She's scared of how she feels.
Are you scared of how you feel about me, Maggie?
Yeah.
And she kicks him out, and he... What does Nicolas Cage do in every movie where he's sad?
Oh, anytime he's dissed by a girl, he gets drunk.
Billy finds him laying on a pier somewhere.
Before a race the next day. He can't stand...
You know, I will say there is one kind of neat thing about his next race, and it's because Ned is so good and so dominant that every other competitor puts their money on Ned to win.
Right.
And he's so drunk, he can't run a straight line, and he's super slow, and he's obviously going to lose. But progressively, every other racer, like, fakes a cramp.
One guy just falls off his boat. He just leans over and falls into the water. None of them want to win because they're going to lose all their money.
And so I think they, like, cancel the race, and it's this big disgrace. But I would say that put a smile on my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And so basically, you know, you think, oh, Ned's career is washed up. He goes back to Canada because he still is... refusing to be managed by Colonel Knox. So
he goes back to his bootleggery.
He goes back to the bootleggery.
And what happens there?
He gets ambushed by cops.
By the cops.
And sent to jail, where Billy comes to visit him and says, you gotta go with Colonel Knox. He's better at managing you. He can get you out of this mess. I can't. You'll rot in jail for the next year. Your rowing career will be over. It's, you know, very intense.
It doesn't take much. He goes, and so the colonel gets him out of jail. They're signing contracts.
Maggie's there.
She tells him not to sign the contract and see a lawyer. Who cares? I don't care. I have a bad attitude. I'm sorry.
Well, it's just, again, it's more evidence that this film is not well made, and there's no investment. And we're a good, you know, I'd say halfway through at this point. The film, and there's no interest. You could turn it off and never blink an eye and think about Ned Hanlon again. But
Right. Had
Cage Cast were paid to watch these films for you, listeners, so we did not turn it off.
For $20,000 a movie, we can't say no.
Right.
You know, we just can't. Those checks keep on rolling in from the Podcasting Association of America, and we just can't.
We can't turn them
away. And we owe it to you guys, too.
Yeah.
For all the money. Yeah.
So what follows is sort of your predictable training sequence. He gets a trainer. Tough as nails.
This trainer is basically the Lucky Charms leprechaun.
Yeah, he is.
Now let's give you a listen.
There ain't no secret to it. It's just train, train, train. Listen, my boy. You may think you're the Blue Flash, but as far as I'm concerned, you're just a pebble in the wind. Now, it's great to have a natural talent. but there's a world of bloody difference between rowing to escape the police and rowing like a champion in competition.
I only won the biggest.
You won because you plopped your backside down in a seat that gave you 50 yards on the bloody field. Well, now, everyone's going to have one of them sliders, and they're going to blow your loafer's oars off. So unless you train, unless you bust your bloody gut, unless you put your mind on rowing and nothing else, you'll never win another bloody race.
So we got a tough-as-nails Lucky Charms-eaten trainer. Puts him through his paces, lots of scenes of Ned rowing on the lake or on the rowing machine, lots of glistening, sweaty pectorals. There is a montage. Yes, there is a terrible montage.
A Karate Kid-esque montage, well, except for the trumpet solo.
Yeah, yes, terrible, terrible montage music, not even good. And Ned takes to wearing a headband.
Much like the Karate Kid, same kind of time as the Karate Kid,
yes,
as well.
So headbands must have been in. But yeah, it's just a lot of, you know, he's winning races and winning, you know, but it's just, no, who cares? He's training. It's everything you'd expect from a typical scene, a typical montage of training and racing and glistening sweatiness.
So what happens next is just priceless. So Ned Hanlon, he's still pining after Maggie.
And we don't really, I mean, why? She's not cute.
She's not a...
She's not Brit, cute,
Brit
listeners.
Was threatened. Brit was threatened by this woman in this movie. I know that I'm not threatened by Nicolas Cage. I have a mirror. I see what I look like, so I can, you know, feel okay with myself. Brit, obviously, you know, there's another woman here. I'm watching, so she gets a little threatened. It's okay. It's okay. We're strong enough in our bond. But what happens is
she's not cute, listeners.
Ned Hanlon buys this girl a puppy.
Terrible name.
She runs up to him all happy and thank you for the dog. I named him Rowboat. And he is... Brit, set the stage.
Well, so he's in the middle of working out. He's in the middle of training.
He's in the horse stables, like a
plank of wood.
A manger.
He's literally laying in the middle of the stables doing...
In a Christ-esque...
Doing sit-ups.
Okay, so
because
he's glistening.
As rich as Colonel Knox is, can't afford a proper training facility.
Yes, he's glistening in his blue Karate Kid headband and his gray capri sweatpants.
Yeah.
And she runs up and so excited, tells him, thank you for this dog. And he says, oh, no problem. Why don't you come with me to this...
Big race. This North American championship.
And what happens next, folks, and we have to share it with you now, is definitely the scene that got them noticed for the glitzy. No, what's the Canadian Oscar?
The Genie.
Because this is, I dare say, Nick Cage's lowest moment so far here on CageCast.
Three, four, five.
I'm going to call him Rowboat.
Ah, so, you like him?
I love him, thank you.
Cost me $20, he's a purebred.
You're not supposed to tell me that.
Oh, right. Well, didn't cost me a dime. Found him being kicked in the street.
Well, I guess I should let you get back to your training. Thanks again for Rowboat.
Won't you come with us?
I can't. Besides, I'm not invited.
I'm inviting you. With you there, I can't lose.
Ned, when my uncle was trying to convince you to join his business enterprises, he said that it would help him if I could be nice to you.
Well, I had that figured. I'm not as dumb as you think. Look, Maggie, I don't care about what you did. God, I've done lots worse than that sober. All I care about is how you feel now. All I've been able to think about is you. Wondering every day if I could ever see you again. If I could ever, I don't know, mean something to you.
You do mean something to me, Ned.
Really?
Yes, but...
Hey, I'm not so bad, you know. I'm kind of reformed. I don't get drunk anymore, see how much things cost. At least not often, anyways. Maggie, what's wrong? I love you, really. More than...
No. Don't, Ned. I'm engaged. I'm gonna be married.
Do you love him? Do you love him? Then why in the hell did you agree to lead me on?
It would give you support if I was friendly. That you needed somebody to...
No. He was wrong. I don't need you. I don't need anybody.
I don't need you. I don't need anybody. I will tell you the bright and shining star of this movie. It's Nicolas Cage's body.
Yes.
This kid. Oh, my. You know, this is why he took this role. so he could finally get...
realize his dream.
Well, I mean, he's kind of been working more and more and more. Yes. Every movie we've seen him be a little bit progressively more built. And in this movie, he's got training scenes and montages, and you can tell he's actually doing the rowing. And you could tell he had to put in a lot of work and training to be in this movie. And he's chiseled, ladies. And some gentlemen. He is...
he looks good.
A Greek god.
The body plays its own necessary role for keeping
this
movie
alive. So we're
going to
put a picture of Nick Cage's abs. Kind of a recurring theme, apparently, for our webpage. We're going to put a picture of Nick Cage's abs up on the site for you to check out. So
they're
please
priceless.
Go there, leave comments, do whatever. But that's the bright and shining part of this movie definitely is Nick Cage's abs.
He goes out heartbroken. Nothing's going to cheer him up. Nothing's going to inspire him to win this race except his two good friends from Canada, Billy and Dulcie.
Hello, Mr. Hanlon.
Dulcie? Hi. You look great. You look gorgeous.
Hey. That's not on your training program.
Billy! You two got no idea. You got no idea how glad I am to see you. I mean, you got no idea.
I think he's glad to see us.
So we're at the North American Championship race, and Ned is down in the dumps. What's he going to do?
He's got to beat somebody with a rapist mustache.
Yes, his competitor.
And I don't know of a better way to describe this mustache. I'm not trying to be anything, but...
it is fantastic.
I can't think of a better description.
It is a solid wall of hair adorning this man's upper lip all the way...
a burnt caterpillar.
It's a work of art, truly.
Give Burt Reynolds a run for its money.
It would. So Mustache Man, Trickett, I believe is his name. So Ned's training for this race. He's depressed. What's he going to do? Billy was sent there by Knox.
To sabotage the
Trickett's
mustache's boat. I just want to keep on moving this along here. Ned finds out that this Trickett guy's boat has been sabotaged. He hates that. He's like, I'm going to win fair and square if I'm going to win it all, blah, 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 blah. So he has a falling out with Billy, and he goes and fixes this guy's boat.
And then basically ends up sort of getting psyched out on the water.
Right, this Australian is just trash-talking him the whole time.
Yeah, and now
he's... you don't know how to row.
Yeah, that's about right.
Blimey!
More depressed than ever. Because Billy turned out to be a false friend, and Maggie doesn't love him, and so he just...
I'm all alone.
Yeah, he just sort of destroys the mustache boat.
Oh, you can't row. You stink. I'm from Australia. Oh, I have him? Okay, yes.
So, anyway, the race ends with...
He rams the boat.
He rams
the
boat,
this Australian guy's boat.
Which is... apparently the worst thing you could possibly do.
Apparently it's worse than killing his mother is hitting his boat with yours.
He is subsequently banned for life.
For life. For how long?
Life.
For life.
For competitively rowing.
For competitively rowing in
North America.
North America. And no one's happy about this.
No. So he goes back to Canada. He's dropped by Knox.
He's depressed, obviously.
No one wants him.
No one wants him. The only place he can think of to go is this Walter guy, who is the old codger who created the miraculous sliding seat. And he wants this Walter guy, who we've never really been established what his past is. You got to assume he's this great trainer from years past. But, I mean, we're seeing, but he basically comes back, on his hands and knees and says, please train me. And Ned Hanlon comes up with this great idea that I can't row in America, but maybe I could row not in America.
Right.
Right?
He's gonna go to the World Championship race in London and row the Thames. And that's where the final showdown will take place.
No band in the world would stop me then.
So, first we have to get Walter to get convinced to train him, which is pretty easy,
right,
as we can see.
Right, because he's had natural talent, but he's never really had the fire.
So, Walter agrees. We have another boring, obnoxious training montage. So, he goes, he trains. Walter goes to Colonel Knox, who is now representing Mustache Trickett, and convinces him to row at the Thames, and wouldn't that be something? I'll wager the patent to my sliding seat against your famous Australian rower. And here is this, in this whole scene, the only really thing other than Knox and Walter agreeing to this big race is we see Maggie again, and it's 2 days before her wedding, and...
This is a great scene. This is, you know what? We see Cage Rage.
We do. It'll be the one moment.
Inspired by love.
Oh, which is the best kind.
Which is the truest rage of all.
It is. So Ned rages against Maggie and against her fiance, and
it's... Here's a little taste of that.
No!
Not
marry this man.
My fiance has no...
Please, Maggie, listen.
Get away! Go away, I say!
Ned, are you all right?
Don't marry him, Maggie. I'm the one who loves you. Me, not him.
Damn you!
Don't do it, Maggie! He's a wet goose! It takes 2 hours to get dressed in the morning. He'd bore you silly. He's going bald, Maggie! He uses Dr. Morse's hair promoter. Bald and boring! Stop it!
What's the matter, Maggie? Are you afraid? I love you, Maggie.
Drive on!
I love you.
Maggie! I love you!
So now we're headed to London. And Maggie's gone. We know this to be true. But is she really? And Maggie overhears her uncle talking smack about the race and how, I don't know, something shady's going to go down. And of course, she has to rush over to Ned's bootleggery.
Which is like, we've never been given the impression that that's close.
No. Isn't we?
I thought she was American.
Yeah, me too.
So, like, she lived in Philadelphia, and basically she gets in a boat and, like, rows away, like, hundreds of miles.
There's no conceivable reason why she should be able to row from her uncle's house to Canada. But she does,
right.
Apparently.
So
she's really the secret rowing weapon of the family.
So it's very confusing. And she basically breaks into his broken-down shack of a place... wakes him up and says, my uncle's up to no good. Well, no shit, lady. What do you think?
Right, I mean, but like, she doesn't know anything other than that.
Right, I have no details. I just came here to say that my uncle's a bad guy and he's trying to trick somebody about something. And then she goes to leave. But then, oh my.
Then.
But then, she's compromised.
Yeah, so
it doesn't take much either, ladies and gentlemen.
No, it doesn't. So here's this character who is prim and proper and won't even let her kiss him, and within 30 seconds she's naked.
Right, because he rips her shirt open. Gently, but he does.
He does,
and
he rips
it
open.
And if life and movies have taught me anything, the ladies love that. Guys, write this down. Rip her shirt open, and she's yours.
Apparently.
Right.
Because here, again, shirt ripping and boobs.
I wouldn't even... This thing is rated R. I can't believe it's rated R. And I will tell you one thing. Racing with the Moon had far more objectionable content than this movie.
Well, but there's the boobs.
But there was boobs in Racing with the Moon.
Yeah, there were.
And that was PG.
And it was PG.
And that was in this era.
Come on,
80s. Come on,
80s. Be consistent.
Come on, Canada.
Come on, Canada.
Right. You know why this movie...
Because that's the only thing we have to look forward to.
Right. Well, let's not say that. No, what I'm saying is, obviously this stuff is exciting in Canada, but we're in America, where things happen, and life is lived. The greatest nation in the world. And to our Canadian listeners, I'm sorry. Or I should say listener, I'm sure there might be one someday. I'm sorry. Second best is going to have to be good enough. And if this is what passes for entertainment in your country, I don't need that passport.
We're such a ethnocentrically diverse group here at Cage Cast.
Obviously, I'm kidding, Canada.
Anyway.
You're still number two, but I'm kidding about the rest of it.
Anyway, so Maggie gets compromised by Ned.
And you know what?
She likes it.
And?
Well, now I know what it's like.
What?
To be compromised. Would you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Compromise me again.
She wants him to compromise her again.
Yes, she does.
She does.
All right.
Excellent scene. Oh, but not before her uncle walks in.
Like, pops up from the trap door in the floor.
Oh,
and
hello
basically
there.
Offers him $10,000 to what?
To throw the race. Maggie has to scramble behind a dresser. Whoo, it's so... Oh, my goodness, I could be found out and no one would care.
You know what? I say this a lot, but in this movie, hijinks ensue a lot. Like,
yeah.
Goofy music plays, and it's this, like, whimsical little...
Oops!
Boo-boo-boo-boo-boo-boo.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's pretty bad.
It's
pretty
bad.
Juvenile. In this movie, it keeps on going in this vein. He basically, there's no reason for this scene to be here. He returns the money right away.
He takes the money, and then you cut to a wedding chapel, and who's walking out of it but a newly married Ned and Maggie?
Because that's what you do, Brett.
But there's no conceivable reason.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
What's ridiculous, really, is that we've spent this long talking about this movie. So we go to England. Everyone's there.
And by everyone, can I just say, this world championship race to determine it all is two people.
Right. It's two people.
It's two people. There's no qualifying round.
We don't see it.
There are no other racers. How do we know that these are the two and the best in the world? We're just told Trickett is the best.
You know, exactly.
It's sheer lunacy.
More lunacy is when Ned goes in to get his boat right before the race starts and sees Billy, like, dangerously or connivingly, like, leaning over his boat and doesn't think, hey, this is the Billy that I know sabotages boats. He just picks up his boat and walks out. Obviously, Billy has sabotaged his boat, his oar hook thingy. He goes out and the race starts and he's doing very well, but quickly discovers his oar ring thingy is loose.
Uh-oh.
He tries to, like, tighten it himself, but obviously he's not going to win the race if his oar ring thingy is loose.
What's going to happen?
He basically breaks down, you know, and admits that he's going to lose this race. Let's get through this. Boats are following these two rowers as they're going. Billy feels bad about hijacking his quote-unquote friend's boat. Not hijacking, but...
Sabotaging
his friend's boat. He grabs a wrench and, like, jumps in the water and swims out to him and gives him the wrench. He fixes the boat. And even though he's behind to the best sculler in the world by 3 minutes or whatever it is, he catches up. And there's a lot of slow, slow, slow action that happens until, finally, at the very end, through gritted teeth and a constipated look on his face, Ned
wins the race! Not exciting at all. So he wins. Whoop-de-doo. Who saw that coming? Not me, that's for sure. Wow.
Everyone's kind of, and you know, and then this is basically the end of the movie.
So we think.
Well, I mean, so we think, like, everyone's kind of, even the old Colonel Knox kind of, like, tips his hat to them as they're going off into the dark night. They're all gonna just go party and head off, you know, and I don't know, you know, celebrate their world championship victory. And
right as we think the movie should end,
these two guys come up, and who are they from?
They're Colonel Knox's thugs.
They're Colonel Knox's thugs. They're to beat up Billy.
For helping Ned.
For helping Ned, which I guess, yeah, you'd have to beat him up for that. And I mean, we talk about the end of movies. Like last week, we talked about the end of Birdie and how brilliant it was. And this movie ends with Ned coming back to Billy's side, and they have a little bit of playful banter. They put up their fists, take a step forward, and freeze frame.
Oh, terrible.
That's the end of the movie.
It is.
So bad.
The end of the movie is not, exciting championship cup. Let's bask in this. It is two guys getting ready to get their asses kicked.
Oh, and then superimposed. Ned Hanlon went on to win over 200 consecutive races. Blah, 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 blah. If you're a Canadian, you've heard of him, and no one else cares.
Yeah.
And that's the boy in blue.
So, listeners.
You know, and I need to apologize for my disrespectful behavior to Canada and to this movie. A lot of people worked really hard to make this movie, and for that I applaud you. Getting a movie in theaters is not an easy thing. However, this was not good. And if anyone out there wants to buy a version of this movie on VHS, I have a gently used copy available for $194 that will be on Amazon in about half an hour.
Coming up next, we give our ratings. Entertainment, artistic, and Cage's performance. We'll give you our total points and place The Boy in Blue in the ranking of Cage movies.
But first, one of my favorite songs of all time. This is Johnny Cash performing Rowboat.
Rowboat, row me to the shore. She don't want to be my friend no more. She dug a hole in the bottom of my soul. She don't want to be my friend no more. Pick me up, give me some food to eat. In your truck, going no place. I'll be home, talking to nobody. You'll be strange, you'll be far away. Big fat moon.
Welcome back. We just finished reviewing 1986's The Boy in Blue, starring Nicolas Cage. It was painful, to say the least.
I was pained.
But we are not one to be deterred by pain, so we will finish this out with our ratings.
Entertainment. Brit. 0 to 4, what do you rank this movie?
1.
I also give it a 1.
At best.
Yeah.
At best.
It's boring. It's plotting. It's only 90 minutes, and it felt like an eternity.
Yes.
Not entertaining at all. Other than a few notable scenes, this movie has nothing to offer on the entertainment scale.
Completely agree. I'd say the only reason I didn't rank it a 0 is that there are some laughable moments that may or may not have intended to get a laugh out of the audience.
Right.
But I found them.
There was a few scenes, but other than that, it is not worth your time. How about on an artistic level?
0.5.
Wow, really?
Nothing there. Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be a period piece, but it feels more like a joke. It was shoddily done. I think there was no artistic merit whatsoever.
Okay, well, you know, I see what you're saying. I mean, obviously, we've seen this formula before, most notably in Rocky in the 70s, done very, very well for a very low budget. I would give this a 1.5 on the artistic scale, not middle of the road 2. But, you know, the direction isn't piss poor. The camera doesn't shake, I guess, and the framing isn't so bad. And at least it was over in 90 minutes. You know, it wasn't... I've seen some really bad movies as far as direction goes, as far as, like, an artistic level. And this isn't that. It's just so boring that I can't give it anything more than a below-average 1.5. And that's being generous.
I'd say that if your reasoning behind rating a movie is the camera didn't shake, you're looking at a pretty bad movie.
Well, 1.5 is by far the lowest score I've given in this category.
All right, how about Cage's performance?
Now, you know how I feel about this guy. Nick Cage is my homeboy. And it pains me to give him a 1, but he deserves it. I don't know what happened to you, Nick. I know you're coming back with the vengeance real quick, but this is painful, and I hope someone reminds you of this someday, and I hope someday, when you get to the pearly gates, God doesn't hold this one against you, because he'd be in his rights to do that.
Wow. Those are intense words.
The performance is intensely horrible. He's just without emotion, and without charm, and without nuance, and it's just not the same guy that we're used to seeing in the previous movies. And I know for a fact it's not the guy we're going to see going forward. So what did you give him, Britt?
Also a 1.
Okay.
Terrible.
Wow.
Nothing.
And I think one of the hardest things about this is we know how good he can be. And so that's what makes it even more depressing. By far our worst movie of this Cage cast series. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be down there at the bottom for a long time to come.
I would agree.
Until maybe Drive Angry 3D, which I haven't seen, but I can't imagine being worse than this.
Yeah, I would agree.
So.
All right. Well, finally, to round out our review of The Boy in Blue, we have our newly patented CageCast Running Totals Rapid Fire Questionnaire.
All right, let me work myself up for this. The energy's coming back. I'm good.
Sorry. Ready, Nate?
I'm ready.
In The Boy in Blue, is Nicolas Cage a lady killer?
Yes, he loves some ladies.
Is he drunk or high?
Very, very drunk. A lot.
Does he have crazy hair?
You know, I'm sad to say, no, he does not have crazy hair.
Crazy voice, accent, or inflection?
You know, not at all, and he should because he's supposed to be Canadian.
I agree.
The irony is, he doesn't.
Does he have cage rage?
Yes, good cage rage. Love-induced cage rage.
Does he punch or get punched?
Yes, he punches, and that makes every movie so far he has punched or gotten punched. A noteworthy statistic.
Finally, does he run with a flashlight?
No. No flashlight running here, but I'm holding out hope.
I agree. Well, folks, that was our review of The Boy in Blue. We'd love to get your feedback on this movie.
Yes, please send feedback.
Yes, if you feel that we are grossly overlooking some artistic plot point that
yes, this is your favorite
makes
movie.
It for you.
This is your mother's favorite movie.
Let us know.
What are we missing?
Send us an email. You can send that to feedback@cagecast.com. You can also send us a voicemail by dialing 86-CAGE-CAST or send us an MP3 of your review, and we'll try to get you on the air.
Yes, please do. Our next movie is 1986's Peggy Sue Got Married, directed by Uncle Frank, or Francis Ford Coppola, featuring the attractive version of Kathleen Turner, Barry Miller, Joan Allen, and a young Jim Carrey, and of course, our main man, Nicolas Cage.
Have you seen Peggy Sue Got Married? What did you remember about it? And what specifically did you remember about Nicolas Cage in this movie? Let us know.
Music this week can be found from my CD collection, and our theme song was written by Chris Cornell and Soundgarden, but performed by the wonderful Johnny Cash.
Remember to go to iTunes and leave us a 4 or 5 star review. It will really help.
Little white lies never hurt anybody. Remember that.
Well, sometimes.
Okay, well, sometimes. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Until then, we leave you with the worst montage music from any movie ever. We don't know the title, so we're just going to call it Slow Death Via Trumpet in A Minor.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, bye. We'll hopefully have a better one next time for you.
Bye. I forgot to say this week we're reviewing The Boy in Blue.
Oh, Brit.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay, I'll do my thing again.
It's over. Podcast is over.
Let me say my thing again. Because yours wasn't, and none of those takes were
Mine
good.
Was perfect.
No, yours were not good.
It was gold.
No, it wasn't. Okay.
Go.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be back.
Yes.